our bodies are built for optimal performance, right? We wouldn't have evolved as a species as long as we have, if not for the fact that the body is really a miraculously well-built, you know, machine, organism, whatever. And so breath, and your original breath, your natural breath, is actually designed to give you exactly as much oxygen as you need. Not more, not less. So if your nervous system is properly functioning, you will have very irregular breath. You see this in babies sometimes. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen that in a sleeping infant? It's like, it's freakish, because you watch them breathe and suddenly they stop and you're like, ah, and then there's this deep breath that comes. And that is the body's natural ability to give you as much oxygen as needed. So when we work with the nervous system, and in nonlinear movement, we work very strongly with the nervous system. If you want to go and optimize back to your body calling the shots on the things that the body is good for, you essentially like rewild your breath, meaning you let the breath be however the breath wants to be. And that's hard for us because we've been taught that we essentially know better than our body. So we're taught, you know, breathe this way and then the body will do that way. And that is true. There is some instances where breath work is super useful. For instance, if you're about to freak out and you can't wait for rewilding to happen, right? But then you can do certain things with the breath. But in the long run, what you want to do is give authority back to the body for the things that the body knows how to do best. And so what that means is if you do nonlinear movement and you hold your breath, just allow that to be. You're not gonna faint, obviously, right? But you might be replicating a pattern of something that once happened. And in moving what you're feeling, particularly when you are aware of that, but you don't, so to speak, fuck with it, meaning you don't force your body to override that reaction, what happens in a fairly short period of time is your body starts trusting you. And what that means is it goes something like, there's something happening here. And then when you go, yeah, but we don't want that to happen. Take a deep breath in, take a deep breath out. Then the body goes, well, but I'm trying to tell you something here. And you're going, yeah, but I don't want to listen because I want you to function this way. And then eventually you have this thing where there's a kind of gap between the messages of your body and the overriding that creates a distrust, so to speak. And so then what often happens is the body makes louder and louder noises to be heard in whatever needs to be dealt with. So the specific thing is your breath is, you stop breathing, fine. Just keep on moving. And let the body figure it out. And when you go, yeah, okay, so I'm now moving as not breathing deeply, mm-hmm. then the thing that happens is something like, oh, okay, thanks. And then often it just drops because you're no longer like forcing the next thing. And most of us have learned how to bypass quite substantially for right and wrong reasons. And so it sometimes takes a bit of discipline to not bypass anything. But once you don't bypass anymore, these things actually integrate quite quickly, because often the only reason this stuff still happens is because it needed to be heard. Exactly, because once again, we go, oh, I want to feel something. Oh, let me, right? Yeah, you're going to feel something. But what you're feeling is you produce something versus you allow something. Right. And there's a lot of that, deep breath is a spiritual breath, and all of that is kind of it's a bypass. It's not to say that there isn't, like I said, if you're suddenly, having massive panic, you're gonna have to just go, okay, right, about physiological size, right? Which, if you don't know that, the quickest way to settle your nervous system is... So you do a double inhale and a strong exhale through the mouth. But ideally, your body can do that when it's needed after a little while. There's a bigger conversation here about what will it take for you to do an embodied practice, right? Or any practice for that matter, which is a different conversation than is there a better time to work with your nervous system? The answer to that is no. Any time you can work with your nervous system is a good time. But then, of course, the next question is, what would it take for you to be able to carve out time? And at that point, there might be better times than others, right? So for some people, if they don't do something first thing in the morning, it's not going to happen. But then for other people, not having to have extra obligations throughout their day and leisurely unwinding your body in the evening is a much better choice. Right? For some people, it's like, well, whenever I can fit it in. And then, of course, you might, find out in your practice that there are certain parts of your day where you need some flossing, so to speak. Right? Because a short nonlinear practice is like a flossing. And, when do you floss? Actually, floss your teeth, right? Probably several times a day, or at least morning and evening. And it might be, well, what do the dentists always say? Only floss the teeth you want to keep. Have you heard that? Isn't that a terrifying saying? My dentist used to always say that. Only floss the teeth you want to keep. Thanks. Right? So it's a little bit like that with nonlinear. It's like floss when flossing is needed and for whatever you want to floss for, so to speak. And then, of course, there's long form practice where you go, okay, I have something I want to work with. I'm going to set some time aside for that. But that's a different consideration than I just want to get current with my body's, native intelligence. And so, for instance, when we do teacher training, the only way that you can teach nonlinear for real is if you've practiced, right? This is not a discipline that you can, write down the words and then just do it. You have to actually have practiced it so you know in your body what it is that's happening. And so in teacher training, we require that people do at least one song a day, every day. But they do a couple of months of that. And then from there, that's your minimum practice, so to speak, if in teacher training, not in your regular life. We can talk about that in a second. But then what you'll do is you'll pick certain times when you have more time where you allow yourself to go deeper into some consideration or other. So that's a good way to go. If you want to develop it for yourself as a daily practice, I would say do a song a day till it feels like you find something that you want to explore. And then maybe on a weekend or whenever you have a bit of time, do half an hour or an hour. And the best way to do that is to put yourself a playlist together of things that you enjoy. Typically, no lyrics, because lyrics will get you in the head, but anything else goes. It doesn't have to be this the music I was playing. It could be anything else that you enjoy. I practice a lot with like classical music and stuff like that, just because I really enjoy that as a, palate cleanser on occasion. And so then put a longer playlist together and then just put it on and don't stop till it's done. That's a fun way to go. But you have to be careful that you don't do it on Spotify, on one of those playlists where more and more shit comes up without you having picked it, right? Yes, it happened to me a couple of times where I'm still going. I'm like, I don't know these songs. Where are these from? And then, I'm like 2 hours in or something like that. So that's a nice way to kind of challenge yourself to develop some capacity is on occasion decide on a longer form practice. But a song a day, like I said, I always do it in the shower. I always, because I need conditioner. So there's always a certain amount of time where I'm just standing around essentially. And since this is California and a drought, you don't just stand under the water while you condition. You turn the water off and you stand there like an idiot for a little while. So, So that's one of my go-to places, right? But I also do formal practice, of course. You know, I use it, do it at the end of my day, typically, before, as a kind of de-escalation. That's up to you, right? Some people like doing it first thing in the morning because it's like 5 minutes, you get it off the way, you feel really good. Or you do it at the end of the day to de-escalate. If you want to build a regular habit of anything, right, when the best way to do that is what they call habit stacking. You've heard that before, I'm sure. It's not my technique, it's something that's done widely, but there's a few people who've really developed that. I think James Clear got it from BJ Fogg, right? Yes. So one of these guys up there in the Bay Area. So you know, habit stacking is essentially that you sandwich something new that you want to learn between two things you already successfully do. So for instance, cup of coffee, non-linear, brushing your teeth. Or in my case, it's brushing my teeth, non-linear moisturizer, right? It's like, I mean, I don't really do that, but that would be one way to go, right? So the first two things I do, I could insert it there, right? And I do that with other things. I have a morning ritual routine that involves tea and sitting and whatever. So anytime I want to do something new, I insert that into my existing practice routine. And then that helps. The other thing that you want to remember always, this is something that is so apparent when you say it, but, you know, we don't always think about it, particularly when you're like me and you pack shit away because you don't like non-good-looking things in your space. So when you want, like, let's say supplements or so, when you want to establish a routine that requires that there's props involved, they need to be visible. Yeah, they need to be visible. If they're not visible, it's like, you know, so whatever that would be for you with nonlinear, maybe the mat is right there and it always stays there. And so there's no way to not see it or something like that. So there's a few things we're looking at when we look at how nonlinear works, one of which is dynamic homeostatic desire of the body to be balanced. So there is a, you know, I'm assuming you know about sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. So there's an innate intelligence in the system that always up and down regulates as needed. And one of the things that happens when you are always revving in the, let's say, fight or flight realm is that you are chronically aroused, so to speak, aroused in the nervous system, and that your essentially, you know, rest and digest aspect is somewhat thwarted, yes. Is the word, you know, so it's somewhat arrested. Uh-huh. And so the way you're moving and the way you're working with the eyes being closed and all of those kind of things allows for the body to right itself and create that homeostatic engagement again. Okay. So that's one aspect of that. The other one is that we have a mechanism that allows us to release after a fight or flight event, right? So if you've ever seen National Geographic or something like, I used to be a total sucker for Richard Attenborough. Oh, yeah. You know, remember that? Yeah. So classic Richard Attenborough is, I don't know, gazelle gets chased by cheetah, right? You know, it's this whole thing. Cheetah gets the claws into gazelle's butt, but gazelle somehow gets away. And now cut to gazelle after having escaped cheetah. And you see gazelle standing there, and gazelle is, you know, fucked up and shaking, and Richard Attenborough is whispering over the shaking gazelle, right? And then eventually gazelle does one last flick of the tail and then walks off and starts eating. So what is that, right? Mammalian response, fight or flight. So in fight or flight, you run as fast as you can, you fight as hard as you can, you produce enormous amounts of adrenaline and other neurotransmitters, and when it's done, rest and digest will create the release, which looks like shaking, amongst other things, and humans often crying and shaking, and, you know, feelings of weepiness, almost passing out, but, you know, kind of getting it out of the system. We do that. We can do that. And then come the next thing that kicks in is feed and breathe, rest and digest. And you see that gazelle walks off and starts munching grass. If we would watch further, gazelle probably then would have sex and sleep. Maybe not sex, but you know what I mean. And so that's the normal way it works. And that's interrupted when you weren't able to shake it out for whatever reason. And that's true for most humans at most times. I don't know if you know that, for instance, in surgery, they suppress the shaking. So when the body comes out of surgery, it shakes. And that typically does medication to suppress it, or even restraints or something, so that you don't pull sutures and stuff like that. So when that gets arrested, that information, including some remnants of the adrenaline, and is in the cells and in a coping pattern, and that won't come out till you engage in the release of that. And so that's a big part of nonlinear, is that it allows for that release to happen. And the good thing is, when you do it via the body, you don't have to relive the entire thing necessarily. On the contrary, it's actually preferable when you don't know what it is that you're releasing. So those are some of the things. There's other things that have to do with the polyvagal system and position of the body also, and you know, interoceptive awareness, creating an intimacy with your, you know, present moment sensation, a breaking up freeze, which is another one of the survival patterns. So all of these things are built into nonlinear movement, and that's why it works.
Okay.
But you don't need to know any of that for it to work, right, which is the great thing. There's other modalities in nonlinear where you actively source vitality or pleasure, and things like that, where other mechanisms come in. Also in the teacher training, all of that's addressed in fine detail. Well, here's the thing. Anything you do new will have an awkward aspect to it, because it's new, right? Number one. Number two, you don't know what's going to happen once you allow the body to take over, right? And this is something that is of great, discomfort to some of the, you know, let's say the wannabe tantrikas or wannabe yoginis, is that when you actually allow the body to take over, often what you find isn't pleasant, and it's not pretty, and it doesn't look good, and it's not pleasurable, and you don't look like a goddess. You look like a twitching mess, you know. Right? Because often that's the first thing that pops out, is the stuff that you've suppressed. So with that said, you practicing and it not feeling particularly good isn't a problem. And there's nothing wrong with that. But there's also nothing right with that in the context of you just do what comes up and then you move along. Right? And you don't grab on to anything. But that takes practice. That's the practice part. You know? And also, just so that you know, sometimes you have good days and sometimes you don't have good days. And sometimes, you know, I don't know, your meal, the stars, your circadian rhythm, and I don't know, Mars are not properly aligned and it just feels funky. And then the next day you're rocking and rolling and you're like, yeah, I got it. And then it's gone again. And that's the body. So I'll give you an example that I think might be useful to identify what I'm trying to say. So when the house burned down, right, that's about, you know, there's worse than that by far. I mean, people have had much worse. But to me, that was pretty bad, right? So meaning it had multiple layers of horrendousness, amongst them that I lost my animals who I love like my children, and you know, and then you know, you start thinking about how they suffered, and you know, like all of those horrible things. But also there was that slight inconvenience of no longer having a home or clothing or anything, right? I mean, everything was there. I had like a minimal suitcase with me because I was gonna go to London to shop, which I do every Christmas. It's like it's a long story, but I have a client who every year for Christmas takes me to London, and so every time I go to London, I pack very lightly and then buy shit, right? And then come back home. So this was that trip. And so I had two pair of leggings, two t-shirts, a pair of boots, and two, like five pieces of underwear and two socks. And that's all I had to my name, right? All my photos, hard drives, everything was here. All my jewelry, heirlooms, art, all my books, everything, right? So there was that slight inconvenience of essentially owning what's in a suitcase, which is quite instructional, but that's besides the point. There was also nowhere to lay my head, really, you know, and things of that nature. Thankfully, I had a place I could stay, but that's not quite the same as having a home, right? Particularly because everything was still burning when I got here. So, and then of course comes all the other shit that people don't think about, which is there was no water, there was no electricity, there was no food because there was no more fridge or anything for that matter. We couldn't get out because if you got out, you couldn't get back in, and I had surviving animals, so I didn't want to leave, and blah, 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 blah. So there's that layer. Then there's the layer of all the people who are very upset for you and now project all their stuff onto your stuff. And then there's the people who are upset for you but want to help you, and then the ones that can help you, and so on and so on. So there's that complexity. And then to make matters much more fun for my nervous system, I had a book deadline. I was actually supposed to deliver the final draft of The Wild Woman's Way on December 15th, and the house burned down on December 4th. So yes, so they gave me a month's extension. I didn't even have internet or electricity or anything. So I'm saying all of this to say it was a fairly unpleasant situation. I'm well aware there's people who are in war and famine and, you know, horrible situations. So it was still a first world problem to say it. You know, I'm not diminishing it, but I also want to put it in the perspective of I'm not the only person in the world being hard done by, you know. There was a very specific moment where I was... Somebody told me I should sift through my ashes, which was total bullshit because there's nothing left. But I gave myself one day to sift through the ashes. I lasted 20 minutes or so, but I was like in a Tyvek suit because it's all poisonous shit, right? With a mask on and the sifter. And I was where I knew once my jewelry was. And so I'm sifting. And it was so ridiculous. But as I was trying to do that, I had this total, like, backwards through my lineage feeling of all the women in my lineage who went through wars and sifted through rubbles and dug out their children and witnessed utter destruction. And it was such an incredible moment of understanding that that's a human condition, and it's certainly the condition of women, you know, as the ones who dig through the rubble. And, you know, not to say that men don't do other things around that, but that feeling of like trying to make sense of something so horrendous was really actually quite good. So I'm saying this to say it wasn't the worst thing that could happen, but it was certainly the worst, or one of the worst things. Not the worst, but one of the worst things that had happened to me. So there was no way out of being triggered. Right, it's like one big fucking trigger all fucking day long, right? So particularly the first couple of weeks. So what I would do is I would wake up and I could like come into awareness, and then the moment I came into full awareness, it was like, oh shit, you know, like, you know that feeling? I have had that also when I've lost people to death, where you come to and then the grief hits you. And so what I would do is I'd roll out of bed onto the floor, and I'd move my body till the worst of that paralyzing, like sinking feeling. And then I'd get up and then I'd face it. And then I'd just like go for it.
So reducing even the intensity a
Yeah.
bit, but it's still
But
being
still
there.
meet it. And then in the evening, I'd do the same. I'd de-escalate my body and then go to bed and sleep. And that's how I handled it. And that actually worked really well because I was at least current with my drama. But it wasn't like 3 weeks till I came to and went, oh shit, I'm frozen. It was like, okay, let me get out of that and keep moving. And so that learning was, I've lost some people in quite traumatic ways. But that learning combined with that makes it so that somewhere in the back of my mind, I know that I have two tools available. One is to release, and one is to turn towards. And so that to me is an invaluable combination where I can go, fuck this, right? And kind of go into it. And then on the other hand, take care of my body so my body doesn't get caught in that massive fight. No. Because I used to be a flight kind of a human. Now I'm definitely a fight kind of a human. So I can go, I'm gonna go there. But the release is super, super important. And as far as triggers go, I'm triggered all the freaking time, meaning I get very upset about all kinds of shit all the time. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to get upset about, and and it just arises and passes for the most part. And then if there's still something left at the end of the day, I do, by the way, if you're asking about daily practice, I do most of my evening nonlinear practice in the bathtub. So I have my music, it's dark. I'm in an Epsom salt bath and I'm like doing it. Sometimes to the point where I'm a prune. And then it's done and then I'll go to bed. So that's the long-winded answer. So I don't think there's any reason not to feel your feelings or not, I mean, I don't think not being triggered is even desirable. If, then what kind of a life do you have if nothing bugs you, right? I mean, yeah, maybe you're like a Zen meditator, but there is something to be said about being part of life with everything life brings. I mean, that's just my personal. I mean, I know lots of people who want to be enlightened and not be bothered, but I think there's something nice about being part of life. I would say though, as a caveat to what I just said. I'm not triggered as in out of control triggered. I'm just going, whoa, right? And then, but I'm able to go, I am triggered or I'm pissed or I'm sad. So I can identify it. I'm not run by it. What I'm about to say isn't part of nonlinear as a system, right? So I want to just delineate that, but it's part of my, what I've been taught and I teach in the women's groups and stuff. So there's subtle body yoga, right? And so subtle body yoga is essentially the, and that exists in many traditions, not only the Hindu and Buddhist traditions, the Tantric Buddhist tradition, but also in other, esoteric systems. Subtle body yoga is essentially the understanding that throughout the body there's, let's say, channels. That in the yogic traditions they're called nadis, channels, and these channels, obviously, if you do an autopsy on somebody, you don't see them obviously, but you can feel them because they're energetic pathways, and I mean we know about energetic pathways, for instance, in traditional Chinese medicine, it's all about meridians and Marma system in the Thai tradition and so on and so on. So it's considered that there's energetic channels that run through the body, and those energetic channels, for instance, when you have acupuncture, right, they line them up. At acupuncture yesterday, and she did all these needles in my face, and it was the weirdest feeling because I could feel like all kinds of like, you know, from the different needles. Well, what is that? Well, it's electrical energy that's being directed or channeled or, you know, pinpointed or whatever. And that, of course, happens in the body all the time. And so that's one way to look at channels. And in that practice, you have a central channel, which goes from the top of your head, essentially down into your perineum and below down into the ground, so to speak, right? So that's your central channel. And then you have side channels that cross the central channel in where it says the Kundalini sits, right? So you have this different systems slice it slightly different, but you have a right channel, which is the sun channel, and the left channel, the moon channel, right? So sun, moon, masculine, feminine, however you want to slice it. And then you have the central channel. And so when you do subtle body yoga, what you're doing is you're checking where there's constrictions, because the less constrictions you have, the clearer your energy runs, the more energy you have available. And then you can direct that energy different places and do different stuff and whatever. You know? So that's a different conversation. But nonlinear originally came from me working with my central channel. And I found it super useful. And there is an aspect of the practice that essentially, if you kind of start relaxing little knots and channels and constrictions and knots in the body and in the core of your body particularly, you suddenly have a lot of space. And then if you're sensitive, you can actually feel the flow of energy through the body in different ways. And that's, I guess, what happened. It's pretty cool.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and those are great feelings, because then suddenly you get aware of what's possible in your body, right? Both from a physiological, but also from a kind of esoteric, that's the best way to say it, right? In esoteric as in hidden, you're not aware of it till it's revealed, right? And in the nonlinear practice, it's all about the body revealing, right? So for instance, you know, in certain traditions or some people, you know, they go to a guru or whatever who's supposed to reveal the things to them. But your best guru, so to speak, is your own body, where everything can be revealed to you from your body. You know, and then you're not dependent on a human, which is always good.